You're listening to the Audacious Church podcast. This message was recorded live at our Manchester campus. We know this is a great investment into your life. So tune in, listen up, and stay focused. For any more information, visit us online, audaciouschurch.com.
Today's message is about a prayer of faith. I wonder if you've ever watched one of those YouTube tutorials or social media-based life hacks. Give me a wave if you've ever watched one of those. Okay, you have. And also, continue waving if you watched it and thought, easy, I'll just do that. Okay, continue waving if you then had a go and it was a nightmare. Exactly. It's so frustrating when things that are supposed to work don't work. And we started the year off with a mini-series of messages from Pastor Glynn called, say it with me, God Works. Not many people on the God, few people caught up with the works. Okay, we'll try again. Pastor Glynn started the year with a mini-series called God Works. And really, you know, as a preaching team here at Audacious, whenever we do a series, we often do a week on when the thing that we're talking about doesn't work. And for some reason, I don't know why, maybe that I'm an expert in this area, they always tend to assign me to that week. We did a finance series last year, and I did the week on when your finance goes belly up, it goes wrong. We did a family or a relationship series, and I did the week on when it all goes wrong. And really what I want to talk to you about today is when prayer, or it's perceived that prayer doesn't work. I watched a YouTube tutorial about how to use silicon. You're already laughing. I know, right? I've been upskilling in the area of DIY for the last 2 years. And one thing that I just cannot get, no, there are many, but one of the things that I just cannot get right is the silicone, which is the white rubbery stuff that goes around the bath, just for those who are not professional like myself. And whenever I do it, my wife, who, let's say, how can I say this kindly, has a keen eye for detail. Yeah, has a keen eye for detail. She's never happy. No, I'm joking. We're fine. And so I said to her, we need to reseal the bath. We need to seal the shower tray. And she was like, we need to get someone in. I'm like, that's embarrassing. You don't get someone in for that. You need an ad that says, no job too small. If you're going to get someone in just to do that. But I said, it's okay. I've watched a tutorial. And so this guy, he was Australian, no offense, Nat. But he kind of like gave us all these clues and tips and all this stuff. And I went into this thing confident, I'm telling you what. I had the old silicon gun hanging off the belt. Paul, you look less than impressed with that, mate. He's shaking his head already. He's like, I know where this story's going. I did the whole thing. I followed the tip to the letter, and it was, I think the technical term is a pig's ear. There was silicon on the bath, in the bath, in my hair, in the loo, on the I had toilet roll and cloths stuck to me. It was a disaster. It's so frustrating when something that's supposed to work doesn't work. And as I said, we started this year with God Works. Now we're doing this series called Vital Breath, which is about prayer. But I want us to take a moment just to see if there's anything that we can do when it seems as though prayer doesn't work. We just read the Lord's Prayer and that particular bit where it says, on earth as it is in heaven. But I'm talking about when heaven is silent. I'm talking about when things get worse. Did you ever pray and things went in the opposite direction and you were like, excuse me, memo to God. I was saying this way, seems like things are going this way. When you just kind of can't seem to see on earth as what you perceive or hope or imagine it to be like in heaven. It's like there's a huge gulf between those two things. Well, let me tell you what that requires. That requires a different kind of prayer. It requires a prayer of faith. And for this message, I want us to think about prayer and the prayer of faith as three-dimensional prayer. Three-dimensional prayer. You see, a lot of us, when it comes to our prayer life, is we have a one-dimensional prayer life or devotional life that consists mainly or often of praying for results. Praying for results. And if we're not careful, we can get into this Father Christmas slot machine kind of prayer life or devotional life where we get up in the morning, we put our prayers in for some results, we pull the lever and then go to work. But what do you do if your prayer requests or the things that you're praying for seem to be not happening? Well, that requires a prayer of faith. We're missing a completely different, awesome, amazing, meaningful, purposeful dimension if our prayer life consists of, God, I could do with a pay rise. God, an extension on the back of the house would be good. God, could you just speak to my wife and just make a few changes? Oh, a lot of elbows going there. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. It's good. We're just being honest. Okay. You know, we go to God with our requests or asking for some results, but how can you build anything on something so flat? Look at that. I mean, if you don't get the results, or you're asking for something by way of results that God knows is not good for you, or in a book that I read recently called The Praying Life by Paul Miller, he talks about how we have to have our prayer requests in the context of the story that God is weaving into our lives. But if that's all we've got, then we're in trouble. Now, there is no better illustration, or I've struggled to find one, than the story of Job. The story of Job. This is an account. It goes like this in Job chapter 1. Job was a man who lived in Uz. He was honest inside and out, a man of his word, who was totally devoted to God and hated evil with a passion. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he was also very wealthy. In verse 6, this section in the message is titled The Test. It says, one day when the angels came to report to God, Satan, who was the designated accuser, came along with them. And God singled out Satan and said, what have you been up to? And Satan answered God, well, you know, going here and there, checking things out on earth. And God said to Satan, have you noticed my man Job? There is no one quite like him. He's honest and true to his word, totally devoted to God, moi, and hating evil. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. I added that bit. Satan retorted. So do you think Job does all that out of the sheer goodness of his heart? Why, no one ever had it so good. You pamper him like a pet. You make sure nothing bad ever happens to him or his family or his possessions. You bless everything he does. He can't lose. But what do you think would happen if you reached down and took away everything that is his? He'd curse you right to your face, that's what. And then God replied, and this is why Job is 42 chapters long. God replied, we'll see. Go ahead. Go ahead. Wow. Do what you want with all that is his. And what comes next in the book of Job for 40 odd chapters? Well, I'll explain the context in a minute, but what happens next is nothing short of a tragedy. I'm talking soap opera. No. I'm talking Shakespearean level, like disaster, carnage. In one family, Job loses everything. Wealth, health, family, friends, the fabric of his life disintegrates before his eyes. And then the next 41 chapters, if you've not read it, you may be surprised to find out it's not really about that, but it's about Job praying. It's chapter after chapter of him crying out to God, and then there's other chapters where it's his friends crying out to him, and other chapters where he's crying back out to them, and then other chapters where God is responding to them all. And I've got to be honest with you, it's not good reading. We were trying to find a verse from the story that we're using in each message to sort of read at the start of the sermon, in the middle of the praise and worship maybe. And so I was thumbing my way through Job. I'm like, okay, I'm going to find a verse and we're going to do it in the middle of praise and worship. And at the end of it, everyone is going to stand to their feet and they're going to give God some praise. This is the best I could find. I cry to you, O God, but you don't answer. I stand before you, but you don't even look. You have become cruel towards me. You use your power to persecute me. You throw me into the whirlwind and destroy me in the storm, and I know you are sending me to my death. Come on, church, let's praise. I mean, it is pretty hardcore. This whole book is not a complete example of a prayer of faith, but let me tell you, every now and then, amongst the pain and the angst and the lost perspective and the lost identity and the sheer desperation, there are some words that I think are going to teach us in the next 10 minutes what a three-dimensional prayer life looks like and how that kind of prayer of faith makes you literally indestructible. Let me go to the end of the story, because the start of the story where it all goes wrong and the end of the story, chapter 42, verse 10, is where it all goes right. This is how it ends. After Job had interceded or prayed, God restored his fortune and then doubled it. God blessed Job's later life more than his earlier life. Job lived another 140 years, living to see his children and grandchildren, four generations of them, and then he died, an old man full of life. But what do you do between the two, though? What do you do between chapter 1 and chapter 42, verse 10? I mean, it's not even the beginning of chapter 42, as you'll see in a minute. Well, I'll tell you what you need. You need a prayer of faith. The Bible tells us in Hebrews what faith is. Because sometimes I think we think that faith is connected to when things are going well. But in Hebrews it says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. If you can't see it, you're in the faith realm. I know it's kind of like hard to clap at that point because you're like, yeah, everything's going rubbish. Oh. It kind of like feels a bit weird. But let me tell you what I mean by 3D. Because if we, as I was saying before, if we exclusively pray, right, for results, we're just the slot machine idea, then that's going to do this. It's going to flop. It's going to fail. We're going to get frustrated. But Joel's a nice guy. But Job, he did more than that. He prayed to remain. He prayed to remain. Let me just turn this round for a second so you can see it. Have you ever considered for a moment how relationship turns silence into stillness? I think it was a couple of years ago, Pastor Hannah was preaching, and she said, heaven is not silent, or God is not silent, he's still. And she was teaching us the difference. And once you start to recognize that prayer is not just a, Lord, can we have an extension, pull the lever. Now, don't be insulted. I know that you don't really do that. But I'm trying to go to one extreme end of the scale to make a point that there's got to be more to our devotional life with God than just praying for results. Jesus said in John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. And then it says these terrifying words. Apart from me, you can do no thing. Nothing. It doesn't say apart from me, you won't have a good reputation. It doesn't say apart from me, you won't be busy. It doesn't say apart from me, you won't have followers on Instagram. It's talking about fruit here and eternal fruit. And Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. So don't just pray for results. Pray to remain. You see, Have you ever spent any time with someone in a slightly confined space that you don't know that well? I'm talking about when you share a car ride with someone. I'm talking about when you're in a lift or an elevator, as they say in America. I'm talking about the waiting room conversation. It's like silence is awful. Your mind's racing. You're thinking, what should I say? I need to say something. I'm going to say something. I've said it. Don't say that. It's a nightmare. Silence is awful. 5 minutes feels like an hour. But listen, when you have a relationship, Zoe and I have been married for 22 years. You're applauding her, I know. But the reality is, because of our relationship, we can sit together in silence and it doesn't feel awkward. I'm not trying to think of something to say. I'm just being. I'm not even consciously being. I look at her and all I hear is, why do birds suddenly appear every time? No, I don't really. But what I'm saying is, I don't need to say anything. And that's unusual for me, because I use up all the bloke's quota of words normally and the lady's quota of words. Like, I'm a talker, but there's something about relationship which means that we do not have to fill the silence. And what it does is relationship turns the ambiguity of silence. So I'm talking to you now, if you're praying and nothing's happening. You're praying for results. You're praying for change. You're believing for change, even declaring change. And you may be at the point where you just think, what's the point? Well, don't just pray for results. Pray to remain. Sit with God. Get comfortable with the silence. And don't interpret it as, the silent treatment. The still treatment doesn't have the same sort of ring to it. I'm giving you the still treatment. Seems like, actually, I can cope with that. We're just being still together. Job prays this in Job 42, verse 5. Notice I said verse 5, not verse 10, which is where we said after Job prayed, God restored. This is in verse 5. Job says, I had only heard about you before, but now I have seen you with my own eyes. There's an intimacy to Job's prayer life that takes it from beyond, I want results, to, you know what? I'm happy to just remain. Heaven is not silent, it's still. Quote Hannah Radkins, 2017. Here's another thing that I noticed about Job's prayer life in 42 verse 2. He says, I know that you can do all things, no purpose of yours can be thwarted. You have to understand the context of him praying that prayer. He's lost his friends, his family, his businesses, his health. He has lost everything. And yet in that moment, it's like he's still grateful to God. Guys, don't just pray for results. Don't just pray to remain even. You need to pray to respond. You know, if God did nothing else ever for you, you already have a CV behind you of the amazing healing, breakthrough, miracle, restoring things that God's already done in your life. And if when you wake up tomorrow morning, you're like, there's no point. I've been praying and nothing's changing. All you have to do is look at the cross. What Jesus did on the cross is worth you praying and praising and walking up and down your kitchen with a coffee in one hand and your Bible in the other, saying, God, if you never did anything else for me, if you never did one more thing for me, I could praise you all the days of my life. If Job could do it, then you could do it. That's the prayer of faith. That's a three-dimensional prayer life. I dare you tomorrow to write three things that God's done for you before you start praying. For some of you, it might be a head scratcher, so you might just have to start with the cross. But write three things or five things or 10 things and you will begin to have a three-dimensional prayer revolution on the inside. Don't just pray to respond though. Job's teaching us in 42 verse 6 that you can pray for restoration or to restore. 42 verse 6 says this, I take back everything I said. I sit in the dust and ashes and show my repentance. You ever got to a place in your life where you just think, I've tried everything and nothing's going to happen, it's lost, it's gone, there's nothing I can do? Well, at that point, you need to recognize that God is the great restorer. Someone in here has been praying for their marriage. And you've been trying, and you've been doing all the steps, and you've read the book, and you've done all that stuff, and you've got to the point where you just think, nothing is going to work. Let me tell you, if you spend some time in God's presence praying the prayer of faith, then God can and will restore to you that which has been taken or stolen. Psalm 51, David prays like a mind-blowing prayer of restoration between him and God. He's manufactured all these circumstances so that he can have his own way and has an affair with someone that's married and sleeps with her and in the end ends up getting her husband killed. It is a total mess. And the prophet Nathan comes to him and says, I want to tell you a story about sheep. It says there was a guy who had one sheep and he loved that sheep and he ate his meals with that sheep and the sheep slept on the pillow next to him. It was his best mate. It was his sheep. And then there was another guy who had hundreds of sheep and he wasn't that bothered, but he took the one sheep that belonged to this guy because he needed a sheep and he didn't use any of his own. And David's incensed. He says, who's that man? And Nathan says, you are the man. And it's like, poof. But if you track 1 Samuel with the book of Psalms, you can see what's going on the inside while something different is going on the outside. And I reckon there's someone in church this morning and you think what you've done disqualifies you from the love of God, but it doesn't. God is literally waiting for you to pray this kind of prayer. Psalm 51, David says, create in me a clean heart, O God. It says, renew in me a steadfast spirit. In other words, I'm not going to do this again. And then he says, restore to me the joy of my salvation. And that is a word for someone because you've lost your joy, either by your own mistakes or the mistakes of others or a combination of both. But a three-dimensional prayer life means that he will restore. Don't just pray to respond, though. I've got another one on top, and hopefully it won't fall apart if I turn it over. And if it does, you're going to give me some grace. There you go. It says resilience. Listen to this prayer that Job prays in 17, verse 9. This is a guy, this is 17. It's not even chapter 42, just before the breakthrough. This is like in the middle of the mess. 17 verse 9 says this, the righteous keep moving forward, and those with clean hands become stronger and stronger. That sounds like a bit of grit to me. I mean, in the middle of all that, he's able to say about moving forward. For a lot of us, when things go wrong, we just want to go back. I just want to go back to how it was. Do you remember when? Do you remember when? Do you remember when? And Job says, the righteous keep moving forward. And those with clean hands, like I may be weak now, says Job, but I got clean hands. So what am I going to do? I'm going to get stronger and stronger. We're not just praying for results. God, can I have? We're praying. We're spending time with God. And it's building in us the kind of resilience that is echoed in chapter 19, verse 25, where it says, but as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives and he will stand upon the earth at last. The story of Job in the chronology of the Bible happens in the book of Genesis. I don't know if you know that because it's in the middle of the book. But actually it happens in the book of Genesis around 11, 12, that sort of chapter time. And so what Job is doing is declaring something that echoes through the pages of the book all the way to David. The same guy that prayed in Psalm 51 prays in Psalm 27, I remain confident of this. Do you know how this verse ends, anyone? It's not a test. You don't have to shout it out. I'm just trying to see your face without my glasses to see whether you're smiling. Because if you know what comes after I remain confident of this, you will be smiling. It says, I can't see. I remain confident of this, that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. That's praying and getting some resilience. Let me read it to you quickly. I'm going to get you to stand in a moment and we're going to pray. Let me read it to you in the New King James Version. It says, I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. How good is that? Like, I would have lost heart. I want to speak to any lost hearts or even future lost hearts and say that when everything else is lost, you got something solid, you got something three-dimensional that you can stand on, you can lean on, you can build something with. It's called a prayer of faith. There's another side to the cube that's underneath, but we're running out of time. It says Revelation, write it down and then, I don't know, make it up. I want to invite everyone to stand. We're going to respond to God right now in this moment. In Matthew chapter 28, Jesus and his disciples have this amazing exchange. Those that sort of translate the Bible have called this the Great Commission. It's where Jesus has died, spent, you know, a full 24 hours plus, like off the grid. No one knows what's happening. Like, we thought it was this, and now all our hopes and dreams are dashed. It's sort of like a Job type moment. I mean, if you need a prayer of faith, if anyone needed a prayer of faith, it was the disciples on Saturday. Because on Friday, he died. On Sunday, he rose from the dead. I'm talking to all the Saturday people. And I'm sorry to prophesy doom. I don't mean to, but I'm talking about your future Saturdays. Because if we're in the bullseye of where God wants us to be, there's going to be some flaming arrows fired at us. You know, the Bible talks about the shield of faith, and it extinguishes the fiery arrows of the enemy. Nobody shoots arrows at the side of the board. Well, actually, Meat Parker got a dartboard for Christmas and there's a lot of holes in the wall. But anyway, I'm just saying we're getting better. We're getting closer to the bullseye. Why? Because what do you aim for? You aim for the bullseye, and the enemy's aiming for the bullseye. So I'm not saying this to people who are just kind of like, you know, whatever. I'm talking about people who are going to live for God. I'm talking about people who are going to speak for God, and they're going to serve for God, and they're going to love for God. Jesus says, God authorized and commanded me to commission you. In other words, you thought it was going to be me in flesh overthrowing the Romans and leading a revolution, but actually what I'm doing in the way that God commissioned me, I'm actually commissioning you. And so the Great Commission is the great dare. And I feel like God is daring us as a church in 2022. He's daring us. Jesus said, go. Go out and train everyone you meet, far and near, in this way of life, marking them by baptism in the threefold name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and then instruct them in the practice of all I've commanded you. I'll be with you as you do this, day after day after day, right up to the end of the age. I dare you to take your prayer life, your devotional life, and go, I'm going 3D. I'm not just going to pray for stuff. Now, the Bible does say in Philippians, present your requests to God. So it actually belongs on the cube. We're not saying don't. In fact, I think God is daring you to ask. He's daring you to ask for that family member that doesn't know Jesus, and you've invited them to church 1,000 times, and they even came once. He's daring you to ask in 2022. This is the year. He's daring you in your finance to say, I will be out of debt by the end of this year. That's a word from God. He's daring you to do that. He's not intimidated by requests. But how different are requests when you stood on the cube of remaining, responding, restoring? Come on, we can ask anything.
Thank you for listening to this Audacious podcast. For any more information, visit us online, audaciouschurch.com. We'd love for you to join us at one of our campuses, Manchester, Chester, or online every Sunday, 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.